You have a new DVD coming out.
Hopefully coming out. I never say what's happening. Yeah. I don't plan anything.
Okay, so you don't know when to expect it to come out.
Well, look, I expected it to come out months ago, but we're you know, finishing paperwork and getting rights and stuff like that. And, and then as soon as that's all taken care of, yes, then God willing, it's coming out.
Okay.
Long enough.
Now, when choosing songs for a DVD, okay, how is it different than choosing songs for an album that you might record?
Look, it's interesting you say that because I've never been a fan of music to picture.
Mm-hmm.
I've never liked the idea that someone is going to make music to picture, like a live playing.
Okay.
And the reason for that is the way I look at a DVD, we call it a DVD, what I mean is a concert on film, is that once a person acquires that, let's say a person says, I want to get Frank's DVD or Hendrix's or the Beatles, whatever, they pretty much take it home, put it on, and really enjoy it. Then they might look at it once more and maybe twice more. And they might bring a friend over some other time and say, hey, I've got that DVD, and they'll throw it on, and meantime they'll talk, and it'll be on in the background. And that's pretty much the life of the DVD.
Yeah, okay.
And pretty much every DVD's like that. If you look at people, if you ask people who have them, I have McCartney's DVD, I have this DVD, how many times did they really watch it?
Yeah.
You know, Scorsese did a great film of the band
called
The Last Waltz. The Last Waltz. Fantastic. But how many times would you actually watch The Last Waltz? So you'd watch it. Would you put it on again after it was over? Not likely.
Mm.
But if you simply listened to the music on The Last Waltz, you'd probably play those songs in your car and in your elevator and in your room and on your stereo, and it'd be in the background. The album lives almost forever. I mean, just witness Beatle records, okay?
Right.
But if you had to sit down and watch the thing every time for 2 hours or 3 hours, and in my case, 6 to 12 hours, you won't do it, no matter how good it is.
Yeah.
So I've always sort of thought, why is that? I mean, I'm a type of person that wants to know the answer to these questions. Like, we all agree that this would be true, but then I ask myself, well, why is it true? And it occurred to me that the same thing appears to happen with novels and movies. People will often tell you, not always, but often, and I'm talking about serious movies, not movies of effects, computer graphics, but story movies. The book was better. The book was better. Is it because the book is longer? Usually the book is longer. But I don't think it's because the book is longer. I think that the reason people feel that novels are a better experience of the movie of the novel than the movie is because when you're reading a novel, the fact that you're reading it requires you to actually participate in the imagery. The author describes certain things, and even the sound of someone's voice or the way a balcony looks. But you are required to invent the pictures and the sounds. You are a participant in the author's novel. And I believe that it's the tickling of the imagination that we actually like about the novel rather than the story itself or how it was put together. It's the fact that we are having our imaginations manipulated. And so music is the same. I remember the day when kids would buy a record, put it on, and sit there staring at the album cover. They would stare at the album cover while they listened to the record. Why did they do that? Because the music is coming at them and all of they've got is these two or three pictures of the band and they're imagining, oh, imagine that was done at night. Or, wow, what about that sound? They play stuff backwards even to try to find, to hear secret messages. It required them to participate in the actual music by hearing it. Their imaginations get used. Now the movie comes on and it shows you everything. This is the balcony.
Yeah.
This is the voice. There's no room for imagination. You become an observer. not a participant. And that puts you at arm's length. You're not inside it anymore.
Yeah.
And so for me, a concert video puts you inside it without imagination anymore. And the only people that that becomes interesting to are perhaps other musicians or people who want to vicariously live out being on stage or having people cheer for them. Once that's over, there's no room for imagination. And when I listen to a record, and even this DVD, I listen to this DVD, I myself like it more when I turn the picture off. I go, wow, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? But when the picture's on, my concentration, I become the observer of the picture.
That's right.
And although I still like the music, seeing it done, for me, is a little less imaginative. Now, maybe for the person who doesn't think like me, they're going to get that same great feeling for a while. But I submit that, and I want to put this music of this DVD out as music as well.
Oh, okay.
Without picture.
Right.
Because I think it will live longer, and I think it will allow the listener to participate in the music rather than simply observe it.
Are you...
And by the way...
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to tell you this.
All right.
I didn't do a DVD for 40 years.
Okay? Yeah, that's right.
Everybody else did, okay? Yeah. So it's the first one. And the reason I finally did it was because for many years, all of the people in the industry that I know were telling me to do it, and I kept saying no. The way that they finally got me to do it was by simply showing up and doing it, even though I didn't want them to do it. So they did it as a favor. Yeah. You know, Frank, we're going to do this for you, whether you like it or not. So when they did that, I said, okay, I'll do it, but I'll do as much stuff as I can in one day, play 12 hours, get as much stuff done, and then don't ask me to do another one.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's what this is. So if people want to see me do what I do on picture, this is it. I'm not doing another one, okay? That's going to be the end of it.
How do you find watching yourself?
I don't like
on stage.
I don't like it. How does anybody like looking at themselves in a mirror or in a photo? You know, that weird feeling that we're people in the business, so we hear our voices all the time on
tape.
That's
right.
So we're not freaked out by it. You hear your radio show after you go home, you might think, hey, is that really me? But it doesn't freak you out. But most people who hear themselves on a tape recorder go, oh my God, who's that? Oh, I sound so funny. I sound so weird. Most people get that feeling. And there's people listening to this who know what I'm talking about. I'm sure they do. And I think I don't get that feeling when I watch myself because I'm so used to it now.
Yeah.
But it is kind of odd.
It is.
The one thing it has done, having seen myself not just on this DVD, but there's a lot of telephone videos of me on YouTube and stuff, which I think are awful. What it does do to me is it causes me something very curious to happen with me. Let's say a guy comes up to me and he says, I saw you at Giant Stadium in New York in such and such a year when you played with this guy and that guy, Journey, this guy and that guy.
Yeah.
When I remember the gig, even Cal Jam, I do not remember it from the stage.
No.
I remember it as if I'm in the audience looking at the band. And yet I wasn't in the audience looking at the band. The image I get of me playing at those concerts is as viewed from the audience point of view. Now, I don't know why that happens. Perhaps because I've only ever seen pictures of me from the audience point of view. And when I'm on stage, I'm very rarely looking out at the audience because I'm lost in some kind of maelstrom anyway while I'm playing. Yeah. So I don't have a whole lot of recollections from the stage looking out.
Mm.
And when I do remember things from the stage looking out, I remember it between the songs.
Yeah.
I remember it when I'm talking to people.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
You know, so it's just an odd thing that you say, what feeling do I get when I see the DVD?
Yeah. What city was this recorded in?
Cleveland.
Why Cleveland?
Well,
It
was central. Well, we were going there to do this gig at the Agora, and we had been in New York, and the guys that offered to do it and kept pestering me, they happened to be the crew that do Bruce Springsteen's videos.
Right.
Very professional crew. And I said no. And they asked me in New York again, we want to come and do this for you. I'm going to bring you everybody. I said, no, no, no. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I was going to Cleveland anyway to play at the Segura thing.
Yeah.
And so they showed up. And we got a call from, we weren't even there yet, and we got a call from the promoter at the Agora that said, hey, there's like a bunch of trucks here that say they're doing your video. It was like, what? So we got on the bus, we went down, and it was like, okay, well, it's here now. Let's just, you know, let's do this thing. And we did, and it, you know, it turned out, they did an amazing job. They did such a beautiful job on the shoot that when I got home and found out that some of the audio was damaged, I couldn't have put it out like the way it was. I had to either throw it away and say, thanks, guys, thanks, God, but no thanks. Or I could fix it. And I decided, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to fix these broken tracks and, you know, reconstitute these distortions and this drum thing. And I did. But I didn't think it would take me as many years as it did.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. It took me a lot of years.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to quit. Once I started, that was it. I gave my word.
And get on that train and just kept going.
And I just finished it. So it's done now. And God willing, it comes out.
Yeah. When you go on tour, because we're on that touring thing right now, and you just mentioned you did that one in Cleveland. Tell me about touring. How does that work for you, for your family? Do you leave your family at home? How does it work
then? No, well, first of all, I met my wife in 1980.
Yeah.
And we're still together. So it's 38 years. From day one that I met her, she started coming with me on the road.
Okay.
First as my wife, and then eventually as a road manager. It's kind of like Spinal Tap, but that's what happened. Okay. But so we've always been together. And then we had our kids in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went and started having the first of three girls, it was like I was off the road. I got off the road. I didn't want to play anymore on the road. So for 4 years, we just basically stayed
home. Raised your kids.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I made a record, Eye of the Storm, and didn't ever think it would come out. I just made it as an experiment for me. And eventually, we got back on the road, but now we had the kids. Well, I wasn't going to start going on the road and not having my wife and kids.
Yeah.
So I only went out when I could take my wife and kids. And so every gig and every radio gig and every recording gig and every little thing I've done since then has always been with my family. I've never done one without them.
Really?
And now that they're much older,
they
now have the ability to say, I don't think I want to come. You know, they may say that if I go. I've been here and for 7 years doing this DVD, so they've grown up quite a bit, okay?
Well, they're not. Yeah. So they're in their 20s now.
Yeah, anyway, so now if I go out again, and I don't know if I will, but if I do, it would be, do you want to come with us?
Yeah.
I know Denise will come with me, want to? And it'll be up to them whether they want
to. So they, at the point they have the option now.
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
But did they enjoy the experience?
They loved it. Are you kidding? They loved it. Because we'd go to their school and say, we're taking the kid out of school. And they'd say, what are you? You're crazy. You can't do this. And say, never mind. We're doing it.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that, you know, when they're on the road, they've got nothing to do. So what did they do? They studied. So they'd come back to school. My wife would make sure that she would fax either other mothers or in those days we had fax, okay? She'd fax the other mothers or the school and say what work was in the class today, what was done today.
And they'd get it.
But they'd go way ahead of the class with all this stuff. So by the time they'd get back,
they were bored in school.
They were ahead of the class.
Exactly.
So it got to the point where at first the teachers had been saying, you know, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this. And then they were saying, whatever you're doing, please keep doing it. Because, and one day, one of my daughters missed 90 days out of 180.
Really?
So
that's half the year.
But they still ended up with straight A, 98, 99%.
Yeah.
Finishes. They're still grade A's. I don't think there was ever a year where they weren't an honor student.
Wow.
All three.
They must have.
So it just worked. It just worked.
Great essays. What did you do on vacation?
Yeah, I mean, I never.
Toured with a rock band.
Yeah, I like English literature, so a lot of the times if it came to stuff like that, they'd read stuff to me or I'd tell them what I thought.
You still have time to help them with
stuff. Oh, yeah. Because I'm only playing for 3 hours a night, so
exactly,
the rest of the time I'm with them.
Yeah.
And when I'm playing, they're there in the dressing room.
Yeah.
So they're not off at the hotel, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
So, yeah, so we did spend really all the moments together from the time they were born.
Yeah.
And now we still do, you know? Now they've got their lives and their university and their boyfriends and whatever. And
everything else going.
So it's a little bit different, but they still live at home and, you know.
And there's a bond there.
Yeah, and the bond is there.
The bond is there. So.